Hi, everybody,
Hi,
and welcome
Adam.
to
How are
another
you
edition of
doing?
At the Devil's Ball, the podcast where we talk about horror and genre films in a positive and constructive manner. I am Nathaniel.
And I'm Samuel.
And Xeno March rolls on with Alien Resurrection, made in 1997. A weird movie.
Very strange movie.
Yeah. But why don't you just go ahead and do the vitals, and then we'll jump right in.
All right, like we said, it was released in 1997. Excuse me, I've got a little frog in my throat today, so if I cough or do anything weird, that's probably what it's from. Directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Writing credits for Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shushit for characters for creating the original Alien, and written by Joss Whedon. boo hiss.
No. Yeah.
Boo. Starring Sigourney Weaver, Winona Ryder, Dominic Pignon, Ron Perlman, Gary Dordain, Michael Wincott, Kim Flowers, Dan Hedaya, Jay Freeman, Brad Dourif, Raymond Cruz, and I lost my place in nine, Leland Oscar, or Orser, I'm sorry, Oscar.
You said Oscar, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Leland Orser, not quite there yet
right.
for an Oscar, but yeah. No, that's
no.
Basically everybody. The names of the people I was trying to remember last week was Alec Gillis.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to forget the other guy. But yeah, Alec Gillis is the one that I was trying to think of last week, which was
right.
the guy who'd been designing the alien stuff kind of all along.
Right.
And the main visual effects guy. And then there's somebody else, but I can't remember his name and I'm not going to be able to find it.
Nah.
But yeah, but they're good and,
yeah.
And they did good work, but,
right.
So yeah, but that's pretty much everybody. So what I was thinking, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think we're on the same page, on this particular subject. Should we rip the Band-Aid off and talk about the abomination against nature at the end of this film, and just like, and then we can move on to happier topics?
Get it out of the way.
Or,
let's do that.
Yeah. Because I don't know if we're, I think we're probably on the same page, but I think this is one of the worst things to ever happen in a movie. period.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but.
You know, I think this movie's pretty good.
Right.
And then this abomination against whatever you got, God, nature, man, whatever.
Right.
It's an affront to it, whatever it is, whatever you
right.
got. And so this thing just shows up and the whole narrative goes to hell.
Right.
And the reason why that's in particular a problem is because it's the end of the movie.
Right.
And so that's what you take
away.
I
thought we were talking about Dan Hedaya's Harry Arms.
Oh no, that's just me when I wake up in the morning.
Okay.
I'm not offended by that. But you know, the end of the movie, that's what you go home with. That's what you take away from it, is this
right.
horrible human alien hybrid thing.
Right. I think it starts even before that, because like the idea of the alien queen giving, you know, mammal birth, like, is just ridiculous to me as well, and it looks silly, and
yeah. No, I agree.
It comes across, you know, really ridiculous and
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
Especially when it's, you know, laying eggs the whole time as well. Like, it's just,
yeah. They say it. She laid eggs first,
right,
and then she evolved further to have a human reproductive system,
right.
And so they designed the alien queen, so it's like she's sitting in like a birthing chair,
right,
with her knees open to give birth to this thing.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think, you know, I'm enjoying this movie every time. I'm having fun with it. And then that
right.
thing comes out. And
yeah, and it's just the dumbest thing.
And it's not fun anymore.
Right.
And then I'm like, it's like getting sucked out of a hole in the airlock, and it's like scared.
Right.
And I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling depressed about this? You know, it sucks the whole fun out of the movie, and
right.
it But my question to you is, I mean, obviously, so there's that. So my question to you is, why? Because I mean, I think everybody's on board with this. I don't think anybody likes the human alien hybrid creature at the end of this movie.
No, and you could tell because they don't sell, action figures of it. It's
Right,
just
right. Nobody likes this thing. But so my question to you is why, in the name of constructive, the constructive part of our mission statement, why doesn't this work? Because I feel like the idea is not. Is relatively solid. We want to do something different with it. We're gonna have this human alien hybrid. You've got the concept of it recognizes Ripley as its mother rather than the alien queen. I think all of that intellectually somewhat tracks, but what about this thing doesn't work in your estimation?
I feel like they just took it, one toke over the line. It's just a little bit pushing it a little too far outside of, what these alien movies have come to be. And what the alien monsters in these movies should look like and feel like. They just took it a little bit, further than they probably should have. I think if it would have looked like, a more human version of the alien and been black and, gooey and sleek, like it would probably still kind of work a little bit better. It would still be silly, I think, but it would at least look more in the vein of what these movies have been doing.
Yeah.
I just it's I don't know, because the whole thing just comes off as like I don't get mad at the film anymore at that point. Like, just become because I used to be mad at it,
I get you.
and I'm just
Yeah.
now I'm just kind of disappointed, and it just like it comes across as silly.
Yeah.
And it's this movie has been towing the line of serious and tongue in cheek this whole time, and it just kind of fumbles over it at that point. And even though it's
Because I,
supposed to be
yeah.
super serious, the ending is supposed to be serious and scary and all these things.
I was going to say,
And
because it's not a tongue-in-cheek
no,
creature. It's not a
no.
tongue-in-cheek effect. It's not, like I said, they have the audacity to try to make you feel badly for this thing as it dies. That's not tongue-in-cheek. That's not
No.
camp. That's actually like we're playing this deadly serious.
But it's like this whole time they've been trying to go for kind of a camp feel for this film,
Absolutely. Yeah.
and then like they stopped doing camp. I don't think they were terribly successful at doing camp the rest of the film, because I think Joss Whedon and oh my God, Jean-Pierre Jeunet were had different things in mind when they were making this on
Oh, for
their
sure. And we'll
ends,
talk about that for sure. Yeah.
but and then all of a sudden it goes into real camp at the end, where it's just like it's just ridiculous and stupid, and it's like for a series that has been so serious and so revolutionary to just have this really batshit stupid
Yeah.
ending as just like you just get annoyed with it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. No, I think that's a pretty good explanation. Yeah. I feel the same thing. I think part of my biggest issue with it, in addition to what everything you just said, which I agree with, is also it's not earned. It's kind of like I was thinking about it this time around, thinking about it like similarly to how we were talking about with Alien 3, where like the last act kind of says like here's some answers to some questions that we never brought up. That I feel like if this movie had at least gone out of its way to establish that was sort of a goal early on, that they were like, actually what we're hoping for is to for a human alien hybrid, I would have at least be like, okay, at least you're paying it off. For it to come out the way it does, almost like a reveal. It doesn't work. And I'm like,
And then we have like, Brad Dourif in the scene, like just hamming it up
Yeah.
being the
It's the only good part about
color,
it. Yeah.
the color commentator. Like
Yeah.
I mean, I love him in this movie because I love
Yes.
him in everything.
Yes.
But again, it clashes with like, what the series has been. and what it, you know, is trying, part of it's trying to be in this movie
Yeah.
in a
No,
lot of ways.
and I think and it's something we'll talk about, like the difference in vision between, I think, what Jean-Pierre Jeunet saw and what the script saw, Joss Whedon saw. But yeah, I mean, it just kind of comes out of left field. I do agree. I think it could have worked if they had made it a little less humanoid. I think if they had just made it into a monster and said, here's a new kind of monster, and have it, kill off DeStefano and try to kill Call, and then Ripley has to, like, drop kick it out of an airlock. Fine, right? It might have even fit because the movie is somewhat batshit crazy from the word go. Like I said last week, this is the one. This is the Alien Resurrection is to the Alien series as like Leprechaun 4 is to Leprechaun. Like, this is the in space version. Like, this is the one where it goes crazy. This is the Superman 4, like, where, or the Friday the 13th 5, where they aren't particularly interested in upholding the integrity of the Alien franchise. They want to do something weird with this thing. And so I think in that spirit, this thing makes a certain kind of sense. But and I think you're right, they overdid it. They tried to make it too much. They tried to make it too serious. They tried to keep it. I mean, if this thing had just been absurd, because like every time I watch this movie, I keep thinking I'm gonna like it more this time because I'm gonna appreciate it for some sort of absurd, campy, quality. And every time it's, and again, wick you, I'm not angry with it anymore. But now I watch it and I get a little angry again because I feel bummed out every time it dies. Because they anthropomorphize it, which I'm like, well, out of, this is the fourth movie we're doing, and now you're going to try and anthropomorphize the villain to make it sad in some way. Where I'm like, the franchises about these things are unbelievably awful. So to then say, well, you're going to have some feelings about this one, I'm like, fuck you. I shouldn't be. These are monsters. I shouldn't be feeling much for them. It's not, to be able to project, be like, oh, it's scared. I'm like, great. I'm happy knowing that. It's not fun to watch this apparently thinking, feeling creature gets sucked bit by bit out of a hole in a
Whole
hole.
air though, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, this isn't very fun. And this is one of the most fun Alien movies, so it's kind of like it's just out of there. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think, is there anything that does work about it?
I think the the creature effect
No,
itself, yeah, the
yeah.
creature effect itself, like, is really well done. It doesn't look too much like a puppet the whole time.
Yeah.
It looks like they spent some money on it, and they spent some money well on it.
Yeah.
I just don't know if, like, the overall, like, look of the thing really works. But and I it does keep in kind of tradition with the themes of, like, of Ripley being this weird half-breed herself,
Yeah.
and the queen being, the half-breed, and this thing become, is a combination of the two. And it's
Yeah.
just, I could see what they were going for there. It just
Yeah.
doesn't work, I don't think.
Yeah. No, I could totally see what they're trying to do. And again, supposedly, allegedly, Joss Whedon said that I've heard differing versions that it's what wasn't in his script to begin with, or but that I thought it got later kind of clarified to him saying what I meant was, I wrote something very different in mind. Like, there was supposed to be an alien human hybrid, but it was written very differently. And I know that according to the commentary, I didn't watch commentary for that scene, but I had it on in the background a little bit just before recording. That they did originally, the sucked out of the hole in the airlock was originally going to be a moment for Dan Hedaya, that he was going to get pulled out instead, and Janu didn't think it fit. for a minor character. It was too spectacular a death for a minor character, so they used it for that, the creature. And so, I mean, so we know things got changed, but we don't know what exactly. I've never read Joss Whedon's script. I think it's out there somewhere,
I'm sure it is,
but yeah, I mean, I guess so. I guess Band-Aid ripped off. We've discussed that. Which is ultimately the answer is nothing really good about it, but we see how there maybe there could have been if different choices were made.
And it's indicative to me of the flaws of this picture in general, where I don't think that either Juno or Whedon are necessarily the right picks for this franchise. It's like we said, it's trying to, be this in places, be this tongue in cheek and be strange and be, out there. And it's like what this franchise has always been is kind of a more grounded, nihilistic, franchise where like there's no hope, that's just everything that happens makes it worse, and this is like, kind of like, trying to be a more lighthearted romp. And I
Little
don't know
bit.
if it not in a lot of like, a comedy of errors kind of way, but like in a this is just trying to be a fun, mid-90s movie.
And that's what I mean. And I think that's what I appreciate about it is I like that it's basically a video game. You know, you got a you got your pretty standard we have to get off the ship within a with before the clock goes down, before the ticking clock runs out. And there's just hostile territory in between us and there. And then we just have a bunch of set pieces we have to get through. And one by one we get bumped off. I love that. You know, I'm all on board with that. But yeah, then but there is this tone of weirdness for weirdness sake, that does feel like it's trying to be kind of campy and tongue in cheek because, and I think that's one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, in terms of the two creative main creative forces on this. So first of all, Joss Whedon wrote this before he was Joss Whedon. This would have come out, what month did this come out?
November.
November. All right, so the first season of Buffy would have ended when this came out. But he would not have, or was, yeah, because it started in March. The first episode of Buffy was in March of the same year. So the season finale of season one, which is only 12 episodes, probably would have aired by the time this came out, but he would have written it well before. Joss Whedon came up from a he was a TV writer and a script doctor, and then he wrote a couple of success stories, you know, notably I think Toy Story. But he got this job. But what you can tell where there's a disconnect here that Joss Whedon's sensibilities are very much at play in the script, even in the finished product. But Joss Whedon's sense of humor, his way of approaching stuff, and as a somebody who's watched a lot of Joss Whedon stuff, he's very specific, but he's also very intellectual. Even his humor is subversive. He's trying to be. Even if he's playing broad comedy, it's supposed to be kind of subverting broad comedy. And I think that there's a lot of that in this script. And then, but Jean-Pierre Jeunet's sensibilities are much more playful.
And absurd.
Yeah, an absurdist. He's much more broad. He's much more interested in being weird, in how he's approaching things. And so what you do have is you have a script that I think was very specifically designed to be more, there are quips, you know, the dialogue is more meant to be fast and loose. It's quickly paced, action movie. And then, you know, Jean-Pierre Jeunet is like, well, I'm going to be odd with this. I mean, as noted by, you noted already Brad Dourif. You know, who apparently the only, note Jean-Pierre Jeunet gave him was, whatever you do not act like a human being.
Right.
Because Brad, well, I don't know what Brad Dourif is doing in this movie. It's great, whatever it is he's doing, but it's not acting like a person.
Right.
You know, it's the most absurd, strange performance in the entire film. Dan Hedaya is, again, he looks like he might have been hit in the head with a brick. I mean, he's
Right.
just sort of like
Just
doing
cross-eyed the whole
stuff.
time, and
Yeah,
just
he's
right.
it's weird. It's a very weird performance from a very intense actor. You know, and then you've, but then you, that's, you know, and even Sigourney Weaver is like, I don't really know where I am on the spectrum here between
Right.
human and alien, so I'm just going to do weird shit. And so a lot of these things are there, and all of that seems very much like Jeunet being Jeunet,
Right.
but it's at odds with Whedon's script. Like,
Yeah.
I'm sure you notice this too, that none of Ripley's one-liners work. In fact, sometimes they are out of left field and don't make any sense. They don't seem to have any context.
Right.
You know that, you know, when she blasts the alien up through the hole in Michael Wincott's chest,
Right.
comes out. Winona Ryder runs up, yells, "Oh shit!" It says something like, "What the fuck?"
Right.
And then Ripley says, "Was it good for you, or was it everything you hoped it would be?" And I went, "What does that line mean?
Right.
What are you talking about?" But you know, fine. I'm willing
Right.
to run with it, ready to roll with it.
And then she
And
rips out the alien tongue and gives it to her as
yeah.
a keepsake. I'm like, what?
What? Yeah, souvenir. So you want a souvenir?
Yep.
Yeah, rip it out of the tongue, and then they'll call that back later
Right.
with Johnner, Ron
Right.
Perlman. But yeah, a lot of these lines don't make sense. But they clearly probably did at some point.
Right.
But I think that, you know, Jeunet's directorial style, as formidable as it is, and it's a well directed film.
Yeah, it very much is.
But there is absolutely a disconnect, I think, between what was on the page and what's going on in Jeunet's head.
Right.
And I don't think it's as simple as the running. I think he addresses it in the commentary, which was some, I think Jeunet said, you know, tongue firmly in cheek, that he didn't know what the story was about because he
Right.
didn't speak English. But I'm like, but that doesn't make any sense, because there's got to be people on set that speak French that could explain
Yeah,
it to
yeah.
him. But he says in the commentary, it is a joke, you know, like it's,
Right.
you know, that sounded more Italian than French. But
That's okay.
yeah, he was like, you know,
I'm sure you wouldn't mind.
is a joke, of course. I did not see the film with subtitles until the DVD. And so now I know what this story is about. But he was like, he clearly knew. But I mean, like,
Right.
the usually that I think he said something like that, and it became a meme that people really did believe for a long time, that Jean-Pierre Jeunet didn't know what he was making.
Right.
But that wouldn't make any sense, because I'm like, well, it's French. It's not an obscure language. You know,
Yeah.
there'd be no reason why nobody could explain it to him in French. But yeah, he, but I do think there's definitely a thematic disconnect
Right.
between two admittedly solid artists. Joss Whedon is a very is a, you know, a problematic guy.
Right.
He's been quote unquote canceled, although he has a show, so
Oh,
he's
does
not
he?
that canceled.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm
Right.
pretty sure he has one somewhere on. I can't. I've never seen any of it, but
Right.
I think it had to do with like fairy tale creatures in London or something. But yeah, he's not out of work.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
but he's a good writer. I think Joss Whedon really is an excellent writer.
Oh, for
I've
sure.
seen a lot of his work, but I mean, what I mean by, like, you know, the idea of Joss Whedon being intellectual is, if you listen to a commentary track with Joss Whedon on it, he'll start quoting Sartre,
Right.
and but then he'll in an obscure Roman myth, like it's weird. It's stuff that he knows. He's very
Right.
intellectual, very educated, and I think he wrote a fun script, and precursor to Firefly, oddly enough too.
Yeah.
Have you seen Firefly? I thought I remember you telling
Oh
me you
yeah,
did.
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen Firefly and
Yeah.
Serenity. Yep.
Yeah. Firefly is the chaotic good version of the crew of the Betty.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean,
Right.
like, they just added a couple characters to Firefly,
Right.
but basically the crew of the Betty in I'm gonna look up all their names. Of Carl Vries, Jeanner, Christie, Elgin, and Hillard are basically just the core of the Firefly team. You know, except that Christie is a combination of two characters. You know, Zoe and fuck. He's basically just Zoe, but you know, but yeah, because they have a pilot. But yeah, they but yeah, I mean it's a oh no, not Christie. Not Christie's not the composite. I meant more in the sense if you took Kaylee and split her in half, you'd have Call and Freeze, Dominique Pignon's character. But yeah, even though the design of the Betty is very similar to Serenity, and Joss Whedon later claimed that was not the case, that he took that, it was a surprise to him when someone mentioned that to him. I don't believe him, but
I mean, yeah, it's not like, you know, he hasn't gaslit anybody before. I'm sorry, I should have done
right,
that when you were drinking.
yeah. Yeah, that's
You
very
know,
true.
it could be, it could all be unintentional. Like, you know, he had it flooding in his mind, you know,
Yeah.
forming around,
Yeah,
and
supposedly
you
somebody asked him at a convention or something
right.
and said, like, so, you know, was the Betty
A proto Firefly.
a prototype for, and he went, it wasn't intended that way, but now that he mentioned it, yes, you know, it certainly does. They certainly are similar. They're just the chaotic neutral version, you know, and great textbook chaotic neutral too, by the way. But the Betty are interesting. The Betty crew is interesting, and this movie works, I think, because of them. And that's my favorite thing about it. I think these characters are very rich.
And it's again, it's a different, it's an entirely different crew than what we've seen before. And that's one of the strengths, I think, of these movies, at least of the four truly alien movies before we go into Prometheus and Covenant, which are kind of their own thing. Is that every time we have a different kind of group of people here. You know, we've got space truckers in the first one, then we've got, you know, space marines in the second one, then we have prisoners in this one, and now we have pirates. You know, it's and they all act and react completely differently from one another.
Yeah,
So
they're you're right. They are definitely different than any other group of characters. I feel they honestly, I think out of any of the four, I think this cast is overall the strongest. I think these characters are the most interesting outside of Ripley, who obviously is progressively less interesting, I think, as the films progress.
We're gonna get a lot of like angry aliens fans, but that's fine. They
What
can
do
be
you,
angry.
yeah.
Well, I mean,
About
because
which part?
about that, you know, these are more interesting characters than,
Oh,
you know, the
sure.
Colonial Marines. But, you know, like we've covered in the Aliens episode, you know, they're not necessarily that much of characters in those parts, other than they're good actors and
Yes.
good lines, memorable
Yeah.
performances. As far as characters, there's not a whole lot of character work done there. And there's a whole ton of character for these people
Every
too.
every actor in this film is projecting the difference being much like Firefly. I mean, Firefly being the case in point, I think, would be I could watch this group of characters do other stuff. Like I would be interested in watching the Betty crew deal with whatever it is they do all day. Like I think that they're, you know, they could have other adventures outside of and they feel like they've had other adventures. You know,
Other than Kyle, who's the new girl. I mean, you
right,
know.
and they establish that she's the new girl. They're like, yeah, we just brought her on board, and turns out there's a reason for that. She's infiltrating. She's trying to get on board, because she's a eco-terrorist. But yeah, they but do we get the impression that this crew has gone through a lot together, and while they may not always get along, they care about each other. Not enough to climb down a ladder, apparently, but that scene bugs me every time I watch it. But you know,
Which one?
Christie's cutting himself loose while I'm gonna call him Dominique Pignon because I don't want to keep looking up his name. I keep forgetting it. But the wheelchair guy is holding on to
Right.
the damn ladder, and then Christy dies, and then they cut up and there's four characters just kind of hanging around
Just
watching.
standing, right?
Yeah, they're up at the top of the ladder. I'm like, really? None of you felt like climbing down?
Right.
You could have helped. You probably could have saved him. But no, my point is that overall these characters feel lived in. Their relationships to each other are pretty clear. I know people that have that say to this day they're mad that Michael Wincott gets bumped off as early as he does because he seems so interesting.
Yeah,
You know, there are
right.
people like, I wanted to know more about him and how he would
Yeah.
deal with the situation, but he gets bumped off first. And and I think for the best at the end of the day,
Yeah.
because then we have them leaderless, which is
Right,
how
'cause he
you
was literally the glue that held them all together. I mean,
yeah, he's the leader. Yeah, he's the
right.
captain. So without him, you know, they're left rudderless. They have to figure out the situation
Right.
on their own. But he does die doing one of the dumbest things possible. But you know, wandering off in the rest of the
Sure.
group to get a gun. They had guns.
Right.
He didn't need another one. But sure, go get yourself exposed. But the but yeah, I mean that my point is that these characters feel lived in. And I think it gives the movie the most of its juice. I mean, I think the most powerful moments are when they get bumped off. We care about them getting bumped off.
Right.
Like, you know, we feel when Christie dies, we're kind of like, oh, that's a bummer. I liked him. You know, like it's maybe all the other Alien movies had one guy maybe that, you know, of course the original Alien, of course the your way you're supposed to be watching that is you're not supposed to know Ripley's going to be the last person out. You think Dallas is, but we do care when Dallas gets bumped off. We care when Parker gets bumped off, I think. And then in Aliens, there's not a lot of time to really dwell on it. Because they die in big explosive stuff, not individual being bumped off.
Scenes,
And then
yeah.
Alien 3, we have no idea who anybody is, so it doesn't matter. But this movie, we do have the idea of a cohesive group forming where every member of it group is useful. Even Leland Orser ultimately proves to be kind of useful. That, you know, this feels like as they're getting chipped off, they are getting weaker overall as a crew. And to me, I think that's what gives this movie its juice. What do you think? I've talked for a while here, but what do you think of the Betty? Tell me about those characters.
Well, I mean, they're the heart that's beating at the center of this film. I mean, it's if there weren't if it weren't for this crew being the way they're written and played by the people who played them, I think the casting of this movie is exceptional. They got, really great character actors to play all these parts. But if it weren't for that, there'd be nothing to hang your hat on. There's not much
Right.
here in the way of story. There's not much, here in the way of, tension or terror or horror. It's this kind of this movie is kind of just is what it is. It's just here's this thing, here's this thing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a lot of tension that you found in this film that I didn't. But
Not really, no.
no.
Yeah.
So our connection to this crew and the people playing them and the characters themselves are what keeps us engaged in the film. They did a little bit of character work with each of them and the way that they're designed and the way that the even down to their costume details and the fact that I'm not gonna look up their names. Ron Perlman's character, it makes moonshine and has this blunderbuss that's like looks like it's a thermos and the wheelchair guy's chair is hiding a big shotgun and little pieces like that that give these people character in no time flat is what drives this film, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of lines in the ship. I mean, like, you know, but the conversation between the Elgin and Christie.
Right.
That they, you know, they're talking about what they're planning to do, but as Christie is, you know, putting guns on his arms, you know,
Right.
collapsible guns, because they are like, are we expecting trouble? And he's like, well, we don't know. Probably not, but maybe, you
right.
know, that they're like, we're prepared in the event that we are in trouble. You know, just goes to show you what kind of people they are.
Yeah.
And what they're thinking. I mean, it's a lot of really good writing that goes into it, that develops these characters. And that's where Joss Whedon, I think, does
right.
his real contribution to the script really does come into play.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, this is when he's really, you know, coming into his own, as far as, you know, being, you know, the script writer that he's known to be. And it shows that, you know, this is one of his lesser works, and one of the pieces that people don't really talk about that much is this movie. But you can see all of his, you know, good attributes in the script.
Absolutely.
Even if, like I said before, you know, I think that he's not the right pick for this franchise.
No, probably not. I mean, he's very much like I said, he's always wants to subvert. And Alien mostly played things straight. These movies always run on a certain engine of simplicity.
Right.
And I think Alien Resurrection does too, but it's a much different, it's a different kind of simplicity.
Yeah. And I don't fault them for trying to go in a different direction, because each of the films tried to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah, no, so, no two Alien movies are alike, really.
No,
yeah.
No. Even the later ones, you know, these, you know, the ones that we're going to be talking about coming up here, you know, are not the same movie over again.
No.
Even if, you know, in the press junkets for each of these movies, you know, people will say that, oh, we're trying to make Aliens again, or we're trying to make the first Alien again. You know, it never really is true. You know, they're always doing their own thing, taking their own spin on it.
Yeah. Well, this movie's more like Aliens than Alien.
Right.
And then Alien 3 is more like Alien.
Right,
than
but
Aliens.
That's what I'm saying. Like in the press junket, you know, for any of these films that come out, they always talk about it being akin to one or the other of the two first films. And you know, even if it's never really the case, you know, but they have to say it. You know, it's like how in Star Trek, every time they have to say, well, this is going to be our version of, you know, the Wrath of Khan. You know,
right. Well, yeah, you always want to make sure that you want to tell the audience that, so they go see it. Yeah. But yeah, but no, this movie is if it's pulling from anything, it's pulling from Aliens from Cameron.
For sure. Yep.
Which is why it's so strange to have Jean-Pierre Jeunet making it. But you know, considering he had just come off of City of Lost Children.
Right.
Which we should cover sometime, which is a phenomenal film.
Great film. Yeah.
Yeah.
That Delicatessen, I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Amelie, not as much, but I get it. It's just not as much for me, you know.
I've never seen Amelie. I know people that love it.
It's a very good film. It's just it's just not the kind of film that I'm interested in.
That's kind of why I haven't seen it.
Right.
I'm the same. I'm like, I know it's probably going to be really good, but it's just not my jam. And so I'm kind of like,
just,
at some point
very,
I'll get to it. Yeah.
It's very twee. And I can't really stand twee.
Well, no, I mean, it's clearly twee. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like the, you know, poster image is twee, but yeah,
right.
I mean, it's, and I mean, I'm fine with twee, but you know, it's, you know, it does take, I have to be a certain mood for that kind of whimsy.
Right.
And I rarely am. So, I do need to see Delicatessen at some point. I don't think I've seen that one either.
It's very
but,
good.
That's what I've heard.
But all of his films. So,
yeah.
At least the ones that I've seen, which we've already listed off, including this one that we're talking about.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of his work after this, that I know of.
Yeah, after Amelie then, because Amelie was after this.
Okay, right.
Yeah, but yeah, then he did make some other. He's made a couple other films, but they never made. They didn't make much of a splash in the States.
Right.
It looks like. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I think if you told me like the director of at the time at 97, it wouldn't have meant anything to me. Mm-hmm. But if you had said,
"Oh,
you know,
I was
to
excited,"
me, like, yeah,
I
I'm
was
sure
excited
you were.
when
You
I
were
heard
old
about
enough.
it.
Yeah,
Right. And
yeah.
I'm like, "Oh, the guy who did City of Lost Children is gonna do like an
An
Alien
Alien
movie.
movie, yeah.
This is gonna be cool shit."
Yeah.
Maybe
and
not.
in some ways, yeah.
Yeah, in
I
some
mean,
ways it
in
is.
some ways, you know, but There are some other issues that I do have with this movie. I don't feel like we talked about Aliens in particular, how one of the things that movie did well was made the aliens intelligent.
Right.
They strategized. This movie has one of the dumbest attempts at that because it doesn't make any sense. So the scene it leads to a set piece that's probably the film's main set piece, the latter bit that I already
Right.
mentioned. But okay, so this trap is they go through, they have to swim through 90 feet of submerged kitchen
Right.
with two drones following them, trying to kill them while they go through. They come to a it's the body of water, the opening of the water has been covered over with a film that only a superhuman strong person can get through.
Right.
And then there are eggs to
Right.
impregnate them. I'm like, wouldn't they want them to get to the eggs? Why did they
Yes.
put obstacles in front of
Right.
their trap? It's and I'm like, this is really dumb.
Yeah, it
And
doesn't make a
this
lick
is,
of
yeah,
sense.
this is the same species that figured out within 30 seconds they could kill two flamethrower units at the same time.
Right.
The only threat to them in the room was fire, so they got rid of two of them at the same time. In Aliens, in this movie,
Right.
it's like, well, it's like, you know, we're gonna Wile E. Coyote this shit, and apparently the eggs are really explosive too. Where
Right.
you can throw a grenade into one of them and it will blow up the ones next to it, I guess. But sequentially, they
Right.
explode when the next to it explodes. But yeah, I mean, it leads to a cool set piece. It's a cool image, but it's one of those things that I'm like, really, I think this probably should have been thought through, you
Right.
know? Because first of all, I mean, like I said, the drones are trying to kill them on their way through the kitchen, which would be the
Right.
opposite of what they want. They
Right.
want them to give birth to more aliens.
And they're putting the alien eggs in a place where they're the hardest to get to. I
Yeah.
mean, not even putting aside the film that they put over the water to trap humans, you'd put it at the entrance to this submerged area, not, at the end of a 90-foot tunnel,
Yeah. Yeah, why wasn't it before the kitchen? I
Right.
mean, well, that's flooded. That's useless. Like, we could probably put it on the other side of it, you know, where they're going to come through or herd them in the direction that we want them to.
Right.
The aliens are often also not particularly present for a
No.
lot of this chase, and which is a little odd,
Well,
I think.
I like the one part during this underwater chase where the alien is gaining or is gaining on them, the remaining one, because they blow one of them up. And then you have the stuff with the trying to get through the film and stuff, all that happens. And then they cut back to the alien and it's the same distance away that it was before. It's just like, come on.
It didn't close
Right.
during that time. Yeah.
It just kind of
And
stood there laughing at them or something on the moon.
apparently it was like, I don't know what's happening right now, but you know, it's and if, because again, if it was, the point was to herd them into the eggs, why was the film there in the first place? And then you know, and why did it grab the one girl? You know,
But
like, what did it,
if we want to nitpick, this movie, we could do that all day with film, because
Like I said, it does, it leads to a cool set piece, but yeah.
right, because like the crew of the Betty all know how the alien life cycle works,
True.
and there's no reason that they would.
Yeah.
There wasn't a scene of, Ripley explaining to him, okay, first there's a she didn't pull out the whiteboard
Yeah.
and go, here's the eggs.
Yeah. So here's what happens. Yeah.
Right.
Here's how this works. No, you're right. And we and again, that's CinemaSins' job. That's not
Right,
our
right,
thing.
right.
But
But I did notice that this run through. I'm like, there's no reason they would know how any of this works.
yeah,
And
there's,
they'd just be like, ah, more monsters,
yeah. Until the scene with Leland Orser, at least, where she says, "Well, this is how this works. You know, there's a
Right.
monster in your chest." Cole knows how they work. You
But
know.
Orser does, like, kind of instinctively knows that that's how it works too before she even explains it to him. And
Yeah.
it's like it's I don't know if that was in the original script, but it's like somebody forgot that, like, there's no aliens movies in the alien,
Right. Well, I mean, it's one thing that if this movie
It
does it, and then
it's just like how they do it in every zombie movie. Like there's it's in a universe where there's no zombie movies.
yeah. Well, that's the horror genre in general. Horror
Right.
genre, horror movies usually don't exist in a world with horror movies in them,
Right.
because otherwise people would make different choices. But at least allegedly.
Right.
But no, it's something actually that it's funny that you mentioned that, because it's something that this movie does, and Prometheus does it as well. Covenant does it as well, which is modern pop culture references in a movie that takes place 500 years from now.
Right.
We got Popeye the Sailor Man being whistled, and I'm like, does that last for 500 years? I mean, like, okay.
Right.
The next two movies do it too, and it's a little bit more forgivable with Prometheus and Alien Covenant, because those actually happen in our this not too distant future.
Right.
But
At least
Alien
not,
Resurrection, they establish, is 200 years after Alien 3,
Right.
which is already well into the future. So
Right.
we're talking hundreds of years, the better part of a millennia by the time we get here. Papa the Sailor Man is still being
Right.
referenced.
And I guess I don't know where they came up with it. But in the IMDb trivia, somebody had mentioned that it's like this takes place in the 24th century, like 2377 or something like that. I'm like, it feels like it should be a lot longer in the future than that. But
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where they came up with that number, because it's never really stated, unless there was something on screen that stated it that, went by in a second,
I didn't see it. Yeah,
Right.
they well, no, in the commentary track they do mention that there was a conversation had about how whether or not they should indicate when we are.
Right.
That how much time has passed, and Janu basically said no.
Right.
We don't need to. The only time anything is mentioned is Call specifically states Ripley died 200 years prior.
And
And
that's not an exact number,
yeah.
it's just like them saying, oh,
Right.
it's like how we say the Civil War was 200 years ago or whatever. It's,
Yeah.
no, it's not.
Yeah, but no. But no, the but yes, I mean, that's the only indicator we have. I think there's a general tone that it's way in the future.
Right.
But things, because the movie just has that feel of it's really like it's so far in the future that we can barely recognize it.
Right.
Because it doesn't feel familiar at all. And I think that's part of the reason why they had like Brad Dourif or Dan Hedaya behaving in that way, because they were kind of
Right.
trying to sell the idea that culturally this is weird. I do like the casual joke of Weyland-Yutani was bought out by Walmart at
Right.
some point in the, you know. If that movie were made now, it'd be Google
Right.
or
X. Yeah.
Amazon, yeah. Which is something I was thinking about. I was like, I wonder if Amazon has a bioweapons division. I assume it does.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, these major corporations probably own something or other. But
Right.
I mean, considering Weyland-Yutani was sort of implied to be kind of a combination of like Blackwater,
Right.
or what's the name of that major weapons dealer? And there's a few of them,
Right, yeah.
but yeah, a combination of like Walmart and,
Right.
weapons manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, like if Lockheed Martin and Amazon became one thing, it'd be
Right.
Weyland-Yutani. And now the implication is sort of like, he says, well, that's wet, long gone. Yeah, but I do feel like, oh, well, this is what's left
Right.
is, the world we live in now in that movie. Is Weyland-Yutani may not really be there, but it's still there. You
Right.
know, the it just became part of the government, corporate,
Right.
the synergy between corporations and government became complete, and which we're getting there.
Right.
So in our time.
Much quicker.
Yeah, much, much quicker. Which I thought was funny because also it was something that Joss Whedon kind of brought to Firefly as well. It was the idea that the alliance, the main villains of Firefly basically were, the merger of the corporate and the government into one solidified concept. Except with the added addition of the only two cultures that were to survive long enough would be America and China, the two imperialists, which I thought was always thought was clever. And they were like, well, hundreds of years in the future, we haven't run into aliens or anything yet, so the only two cultures that were powerful enough to survive the merger are the two major imperialists. And then just to do, colonialism as a concept.
All over again,
But
yeah.
I feel like all of it is here in Alien Resurrection. But the at least this movie gives a much clearer definition. One of the things I did like, same scene, the Dr. Wren is talking about Weyland-Yutani no longer being around. And at least details to Ripley what they want the alien for, and they make a little bit more sense. Because I always wondered, I found myself wondering at the beginning of this movie, watching it again. I was like, so is this still bioweapons? Because who are we at war with that we need at this point that you need xenomorphs? At least with Weyland-Yutani, it was like, well, we can have a weapons contract with a government.
Well, I mean, it's heavily implied just by the way that spatially this movie is set up, where the space station is and everything like that, the outskirts of the solar system, that the American military only really covers like the US solar system. The US solar system, yeah, the United States solar system. Which was a misspoke on my part, but it actually works out well, because it's basically what it is at this point. So I think that all the colonies are probably these weird libertarian worlds where nobody's in charge, but whatever company founded them.
Could be right, which is how it
So they
was in
could be at war with
Firefly.
those, right? Yeah, and so it could be, they say, using it for urban pacification, which is insane, but I get it. But I could see them using these weapons to decolonize a world. It's like, oh, these people aren't playing along with our plan. Let's drop a few aliens on them, and then a month later, there's going to be no humans left. So ta-da.
He also does say, though, that he's like the other implications of them. Like he does say, well, what about there could be vaccines, there could be all these advances and biotech. That I'm like, at least that makes sense to me, but yeah, it's like urban pacific, beyond urban pacification, there's these other benefits,
But then
which
again,
make
I mean, there's it's using bioweapons in the real world is stupid because they don't stop where you want them to. So I guess it's not, out of sorts for them to think that they can use a bioweapon like this, not have any problems. It's
Well, I
kind of like
mean, they.
the Resident Evil series is, all based on that as well.
Yeah, the stand. We created a
Yeah.
super, we just souped up the flu to use on our enemies, but we didn't stop to think that once it was out, it would just kill everybody. Although they didn't intend for it to get out. They were never going to use it in the stand. But the but yeah, I mean, at least with Weyland-Yutani, it made sense to me because it was like, well, we can develop this and then sell it to whomever wants it. This is the outright military, outright government kind of being like, well, we're gonna make it. So at least when they say, also there's this other stuff, I'm like, okay, that makes more sense to me than just a weapon. I do like the slight insinuation that cloning has never been that successful. Like this might be the first time it's actually really worked out for them. That's clever. The other thing I really liked was, of all things, Call's backstory. I thought that was really cool. It's rattled off by DeStefano in like 2 minutes, but it's a cool story. I'm like, if I were to write an alien, if they were to come to me and say, hey, write something based in the alien world, I'm like, can I write about the Autons? Because that's cool. like, you know, robots built by robots. They were supposed to, you know, revolutionize the synthetic industry. Instead, they buried it
Right.
and they rebelled, didn't like being told what to do. They asked all those questions that sci-fi always asks about
Right.
personhood, came up with, like, well, we're being used. So we burned our modems and a few of us
Right.
got out.
Right.
The casual line of company recall, which meant they went and murdered all of them.
Right.
All of these thinking, feeling beings that are, you know, they're, yeah, I'm technically, I'm a machine, but
Oh yeah, we're just retiring these replicants, you know.
yeah,
It's
exactly. Exactly. It's Blade Runner.
right. Yep.
You know, that we made these synthetics were made by the androids and then they were made too well. And they didn't want to play ball, and so they bailed
Right.
rather than be killed because they understood the concept of death in a way the
Right.
other synthetics didn't. Bishop didn't seem to mind.
Yeah.
You know, in Alien 3, he's not like, hey, maybe I can get rebuilt. He's just like,
Right.
no, go ahead and unplug me. It's kind of useless at this point. Call is like, nope, I'm not dying.
Right.
Not for you people. I do love the I feel like I shouldn't because it feels out of place, but I do like the chapel scene with the two talk and Ripley says, what,
Right.
they programmed you to be an asshole? You're the
Yeah.
new asshole model they're putting
Right.
out? I'm like, that's Joss Whedon right there.
Yeah.
That's totally a Joss Whedon written scripted line.
It
But
works. It's funny.
it does make me
Yep.
laugh. Yeah, it's
Yep.
a good list. It's a good laugh. But you know, yeah, you're the new asshole model they're putting out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I do those other things I really like. There's some fun sci-fi tidbits in here, some
Right.
good world building, some good you know, stuff has happened in the last 200 years. It wasn't just
Right.
them sitting around
Yeah.
waiting
I
for a
like
clone
the fact
Ripley to
that nobody
pop
wants to go back to Earth because Earth sucks, you know.
Earth, man, what a
What a
shithole.
shithole.
Yeah. Did you watch the special edition or did you watch the theatrical cut?
I just watched the theatrical cut. Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever seen the special edition?
If it's on the Quadrility box set, yes. I don't
Oh.
recall. I don't remember offhand if I have or not.
It's pretty much the same. There's just a few
Right.
alterations. Some
Yeah.
extended scenes, a little bit more dialogue. Usually in already existing scenes. There was just stuff that was
Right.
cut down. It has an alternate beginning and an alternate ending. And the alternate ending I don't like. It's basically the same dialogue. They've killed the monster,
Right.
the abomination, except that they get to Earth. They're on Earth and
Okay.
it's all
Right.
wrecked. And they have basically the same conversation where,
Right.
you know, with the last, same last line of, I don't know, I'm a stranger here myself. But it shows like Paris is all destroyed. It's all,
Oh, okay.
you know, the Eiffel Tower in the background. In the
Right.
theatrical version, it's kind of like Earth doesn't seem that bad looking.
No, they got these
Like
beautiful
it,
clouds and, you
yeah, some
know,
clouds and
just
some water. Yeah.
right.
This is like Earth's basically a wasteland.
Right.
But I don't care for it because it was something that I think James Cameron pointed out. Ripley never gets back to Earth
Right.
ever in the first
Right.
four films.
Yeah.
She's on the Nostromo, she flows through, they find her, they take her to the space station outside of Earth.
Right.
And then she goes back to the colony, ends up on Fury, dies, cloned on another space station that technically she's on her way back to Earth in the theatrical cut of Alien Resurrection,
Right.
but she never makes it home. And I like that. I
Yeah.
like that concept. And so to show her on Earth, I'm like, yeah, there's a reason why you cut that, you know.
Right.
But yeah, it was that was really the only those fundamental differences. And there was
Oh, okay.
you know, the opening, the beginning has a unfinished kind of CGI effect. Doesn't work very well of a bug that looks like it's going to be an alien, but then it pans back to real. It's just a bug, and a guy like smushes it and like
Okay.
is on the space station doing stuff. Versus, I think the weird like you know, wavery effect shot that happens at the beginning of the
Right.
theatrical. I do like Jean-Pierre Jeunet does an introduction on this on the special edition where he outright says, this is not a director's cut. The director's cut is the movie. The theatrical is the director's cut.
Yay.
Yeah. He said, I would not have, you know, the the movie that came out was the director's cut.
Right.
And so this is just like a an alternate version, a special edition, which is basically just like I said, the alternate ending, alternate beginning, and a couple of
Right.
extra lines of dialogue. I started it early thinking it was going to be much longer. I was like, oh,
Right.
special edition. This is going to be another 25 minutes, right? And I was like, well,
No,
no, actually, it's only like 5, 6 minutes longer.
that's not bad.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's not long. Oh no, it's a little bit longer than that because I think the film runs at 109, the theatrical,
Right.
and the special edition is 2 hours, so 15, 11 minutes
Okay.
more, I guess. So 10 minutes. But so yeah, it's not. It's still basically the same movie. Just a little bit
Right.
added stuff in there. But yeah, what do you like about Alien Wars Erection? What the
Well, that we haven't mentioned before, they said the cast is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Brad Dourif's performance in this is like one of my favorites of his. The scene where he's just, monitoring the alien through the glass, and he's mocking basically what he's doing, and hovering his hand over the button that, sprays them with liquid nitrogen. Just hilarious. It's
Yeah.
just a
It's
lot of fun.
such a weird
Yeah,
scene.
right.
Yeah.
It's so weird, and I love it.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, they came up with a solid enough reason to bring Ripley back to where they got, Sigourney Weaver back. And I know that a lot of
Yeah.
that has to do with the $11 million they paid her.
Yeah. Yeah.
She also wouldn't have taken the role if she wasn't interested in some of the scenes in the film, like, the one where she sees all her clones, and
Supposedly, that's the scene that made her actually say yes to the script. Yeah.
She's got some, scenes where she shows some tenderness and, a different side of her. This movie's a lot more sexual than the other films. There's a lot of sexual tension going on between weird things and between Sigourney Weaver and everything else, I would just say.
Very true. True. You know,
Between,
it's funny. I was watching it, and when Ripley's boning an alien, basically,
Right.
I found myself thinking, it was like, you know, when I was a kid and I watched this movie for the first time, I thought it was just carrying her. And I
Right.
wish I could go back. And
Yeah.
it was so much nicer being a kid and just being like, yeah, it's carrying her.
Right.
It's not
They're
having.
just wrestling, it's
Yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
But it's
Yeah.
something we haven't explored in the other films, like, really,
No, you're right. That's very true. That is true. We have not explored
and
that
for this
element.
for being for having so much, psychosexual, undercurrents in the other films of, the alien and what it represents and all that, which, has been talked to death. There's
Yeah.
never actually been an exploration of like a character sexuality in any of this, other than maybe a little bit here.
Yeah.
That's kind
Well,
of
yeah.
interesting,
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a disconnect, I think, that occurs that I don't think Winona Ryder's into it. I
No.
don't think she gets, she sees it. But there,
Right.
Sigourney Weaver is like throwing, like, I'm gonna have sex with you at Winona Ryder
Right.
for most of this film. And Winona Ryder just seems oblivious to it.
Right.
It's kind of like they're roommates in Winona Ryder's head.
Yeah,
You
autons
know.
don't get flirty, apparently.
Yeah. You know, it's it has that energy of the, oh, no, they're just roommates.
Right.
That's Winona Ryder, that's the energy Winona Ryder is bringing to it,
Right.
which is funny. But it's funny to watch because you realize she rip Sigourney Weaver is absolutely playing
Right.
I'll have sex with anybody, but and in particular I want to have sex with Winona Ryder, and
Right.
Winona Ryder is just like, yeah, I don't see it. She's completely oblivious to it.
Like
But
I said, I think
yeah.
there's more that I respect about this film than that I like.
Okay.
Like I said, I respect the fact that they, got Jeannot to come on board and do his particular brand of strange, cinema
Yeah.
in a mainstream American movie. I don't think it worked, but I respect them for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. There's a lot of energy to this movie and a lot of earnest attempt at something interesting, something unique. Maybe more so than Alien 3, which had was more had more pretensions, I think, than good intentions. I think Alien 3 was like, we're gonna make an art film. Where I think everybody, if there's anything that I think that Janu and Whedon both saw, was this movie's gonna be fun. Like we're gonna have, this is more of an action movie. We're gonna get a little bit weird with this. We're gonna have a good time with it. I don't think anybody was looking to make Oscar bait here. Critics weren't gonna analyze this for decades, like Ridley Scott's movie. And so I think it's very much it does have that feeling of probably real actors taking a pay real artists taking a paycheck, but still, still trying. And I think I do respect that from to piggyback what you're saying, that they probably didn't have to. I mean, like it's Joss Whedon could have just delivered, toilet paper and called it good. But he wrote I think a good script, and I think Janu could have been like, well, I can phone this in. This is an American paycheck. It's just a stepping stone to my next project. But he tried to do something interesting with it.
And a lot of people, a lot of people turned this film down because they didn't, feel any sort of way about it. Cameron turned it down, because he'd heard that they were working on, like Alien versus Predator, and he's like, I don't know if I want to be involved in all this. Oh my God, I just completely lost my train of thought. It just went away.
Directors who turned it down.
Directors and people who turned it down, like, Janae's directing partner, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he turned it down because he didn't want to do an American, alien film, because he's just doing a franchise film. But people, actually seem to care about this franchise, and that's pretty cool, because by the time you get to the fourth one in a series, a lot of times everyone involved is just like, I'm here for the paycheck. I'm here for, because we're making this because we make these movies. And the one thing about this franchise is I don't think it's ever really fallen into that trap where, like, we're just making the next one because we made the next one.
No, I think producers probably had that idea.
I mean, but that's their job to have those sort of ideas. I mean, So I don't really fault, the people at the studio for saying, yes, we need to make it, is because they just make money. That's their whole job. But anyways, I just think that people, even in this one, like, they cared about what they're making, and it shows up on screen, even if I don't agree with the choices that were made in this, and it's not my. I don't. I keep saying that, like I hate this movie, and it's like, I don't. This is a fun movie. It's the one in the series that I've never watched, really, other than when it first came out on its own. It's always
Really?
this is.
Okay.
No, I mean, on its own. Like every time I
Oh,
do
yeah.
a rewatch of the series, I watch this.
Sure.
I never go, I'm gonna throw on Alien Resurrection.
Oh, I have,
Like,
yeah.
right,
I
right,
have. I turn it off by the end, but yeah,
right,
I
right.
don't, once the abomination comes on screen, I'm usually out. But
Yeah.
yeah, but other than that, I dig the hell out of this movie. I watch it all the time.
All right.
It's one of my favorite background
Great.
movies.
It's a good background movie. It's good for that kind of thing.
And these fun characters, I just enjoy the crew of the Betty. Who's your favorite member of the Betty?
Really give that thought. I gotta go back and look up their names too, though. I mean, it's a dead toss between Ron Perlman and oh my God, why am I not remembering the guy's name? Michael Massey. Michael Wincott, sorry.
The captain.
The captain, and and Ron Perlman, because I just love them, those two character actors,
Well, sure, Michael Wincott's
so fucking
wonderful,
much, right?
and I mean, and that's,
But I love Ron Perlman's character, Joner,
Johnner, yeah,
but his attitude, he's just no fucks given.
no.
He never softens up either, really.
Not really. There's some insinuation that he cares about the rest of them,
Right.
as a crew member. But,
But he's
again,
still
Ron,
just as cantankerous and, shitty of a person as he was at the beginning and then he is at the end, And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Ron Perlman's wonderful anyway.
Right.
According to the commentary track, they didn't want him originally.
Really?
Yeah, he was
Wow.
not,
Well, he
Their
wasn't Ron
first.
Perlman then either, He wasn't that popular.
They didn't really want him. Xinhua wanted him after working with him on
City
City
of
of
Lost
Lost
Children,
Children.
right?
But the funny thing is that in contrast, apparently the studio really wanted Dominique Pignon,
Right.
and that was before Xinhua brought him up, because Xinhua always casts Dominique Pignon. He's
Right.
in every single one of his movies. He before he even brought him up, apparently Sigourney Weaver in particular really wanted to work with Dominique Pignon, and said, "No, you're gonna bring Dominique with you." And he went, "Oh
Right.
yeah, I was gonna bring him up,"
Right.
but yeah, apparently they didn't originally want Ron Perlman, and they definitely what they really wanted Dominique Pignon, and which is a strange thing I think to look at
Right.
in hindsight. I'm a Christie guy.
Yeah.
I like Christie a lot. And I'm
He's a
kind of
lot of fun.
surprised. Yeah, and I'm really surprised that Gary Dordon didn't end up a bigger name. He's kind of the Michael
Right.
Biehn in this movie, because he's doing really first-rate work despite kind of
Right.
being the only unknown in the cast. I mean,
Yeah. I'm looking up what he's been in, and it looks like mainly
it's not much.
CSI.
Yeah.
CSI,
Yeah.
which is a huge show. I mean,
Yes.
let's be honest,
Yeah.
it's
He's done some
a
CSI,
huge
but
show,
yeah.
right?
But yeah, he was not, I could have, I you watch this movie and I would have assumed he was, ready for prime time,
Right.
but he would do CSI years later. But yeah,
Well, only
I
like
think
3 years
he,
later, I think,
yeah,
right?
I guess you're right. Yeah. I don't know when he started on CSI, but yeah, I mean, I just never really saw him in much else, and
Right.
but yeah, he's kind of hanging in there with Ron Perlman, and
Yeah.
Dominique Pignon and Sigourney Weaver, and it's like he,
He's holding his own, right?
yeah, and he's doing, and he has probably the coolest moment in the movie, the well, a couple of the coolest moments in the movie. He has the ricochet shot,
Right.
and then he has the sacrifice, self-sacrifice to save
Right.
Dominique Pignon's character. Even though, again, Ron Perlman probably could have just got off his ass and walked down the ladder to
Right.
help him, or DiStefano could have done it, or Leland Orser, or the super being at the
Right.
top.
I kind of didn't like the they showed him do like ricochet shots like a couple of times and like be like a this great shot and everything, and
Yeah.
then they have the scene where they're all on the ladder and he shoots two full clips at the alien and misses, It was like, come on.
Yeah, you're right. Very true.
Then, Ron Perlman does the same thing except he hits it once,
Yeah. Well, Ron Perlman, at least I was watching that go, at least it's like there's
He's trying to shoot around them,
he's trying to shoot around, yeah,
Right.
his crew. But yeah, there's really no reason why Christie should have missed.
Right.
But sure. He had to die. They were gonna
Right.
get rid of him somehow. But yeah, it's but he's just again, there's a lot going on with that guy that I think, Gary Dordon really did think about who Christie was,
Right.
what his relationship to the rest of the team was. There's a little bit of discomfort at the idea of that he's now the captain,
Right.
that he plays, and just little things like, when he casually says, "So I guess we have to lose the chair," and they say it's just like this maneuver.
Right.
Yeah, like old times, and I'm like, see, I dig that type of thing,
Yeah.
I'm like, they've done this before.
Yeah, they have a feeling of history to them, and
Yeah,
that's been a really cool.
we've had adventures together wherever
Right.
they are. Probably pretty illegal, but
Like when we got caught in that Gundark pit.
yeah,
Wait,
exactly. Yeah.
that's how to do it wrong. That's right.
Yeah. 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 Wait, is that Attack of the Clones? Did you just
Yes.
reference Attack of the Clones
Yes.
at me? All
Yes,
right.
I did.
All
Yep.
right. But yeah, I mean,
Nothing Attack of the Clones.
yeah. Of all those Star Wars movies to quote, we went with Attack of the Clones, but the worst of them. I think that's still my pick for the worst Star Wars movie.
I don't know. I still go with Revenge of the Sith. I feel like
Revenge of the
that,
Sith, yeah.
yeah, I feel like that movie, that series got worse with each prequel film. And that was the first time in my life that I'm like, please, no more lightsabers.
Yeah, that I agree with. Yes,
Yep.
that is true. The end of that movie is a lot of lightsaber.
Right.
But yeah, I honestly I still think Attack of the Clones. I think Hayden Christensen got more comfortable with the third film and gives a slightly better performance. But I still say the worst line read in history is got to be an Attack of the Clones, and it's Natalie Portman of all
Right, of
people.
all people, yeah.
Yeah. There's a scene, and we're going off topic, but there's a scene in which Hayden Christensen and they've just left the train. They've got R2's following them. They're walking
Right.
away, and he says, "Don't worry, at least we have R2 with us." And Natalie Portman goes, "Ha ha 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 ha," and it's like it is the worst pair of line reads I've ever
Right.
seen. It was just this most contrived laugh at something that was just not funny.
Right.
Both actors just getting through a scene, and it was really terrible. But it's still to this day, it makes me, it's such a bad line read, it makes me cringe, and that rarely happens. I'm like,
Sure.
oh,
Yep.
oh
It
God.
gives you the douche chills. Like, ugh,
Yeah,
what the hell just
oh,
happened?
what happened there?
Yep.
But yeah, anything else about Alien Resurrection that we haven't covered?
No, I think
Yeah.
it's a worse movie than it should be, but a better movie than a lot of people regard.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Right.
It's not a good movie, I don't think.
No.
But it is fun.
Yeah.
And like I said,
At least two-thirds of it is fun, you know,
yeah.
it's
And I think if there's anything we can definitely agree on, it's that, a lot of that has to do with just as per usual, that you get a group of great character actors together
right.
and let them do their thing, and they'll bring you way more than your material wants them to.
Right.
That's the genius of character actors, is they stop and think about who this person is, even if they don't have an opportunity to show it.
Right.
We don't, learn about genre's backstory, but Ron Perlman definitely thought of it. But yeah, I mean, I guess we haven't shouted out Leland Orser. I mean,
No.
he's again, a great character actor, very specific character actor.
Right.
He's a lot of fun in this, and it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. The reason we was cast was because he was in Seven,
Right.
and which is Leland Orser's entire career. He's pretty much owes
For
to
playing that guy.
Seven. The
Yeah.
oh God, he put the
Right.
thing on my thing,
Yeah.
and then he told me to fuck her, and I did.
Right.
I shouldn't laugh. That scene is harrowing as
No,
hell. But
it's yeah. But take it
it's
out of
really,
context, it's
taken out of
crazy, you know.
context, it's a pretty crazy, and it's a crazy performance by Orson. Orser, he's such energy as a
Right.
performer. And he brings a lot of that to this. And I dig the kill guy by hold in front of chest burster.
Right.
It's silly as hell, but I buy
Yeah.
it, even though he takes like 14 bullets before that happens, but he
Right.
gets, I guess he gets,
Well, the adrenaline was really
yeah,
working the
the
number on his
adrenaline, yeah,
chest.
the adrenaline of getting an alien bursting through your chest
Right.
gives you the ability to ignore bullets.
Right. Makes sense to me.
Makes sense to
No.
me too.
Yep.
And I do like, I'm gonna call this guy out, Raymond Cruz as DeStefano. A wonderful that guy actor. He's always
Yeah.
playing,
He always brings the intensity of
yeah.
like.
And a kind of goofy frat boy feel to him too,
Right.
but he has an entire history of playing soldiers
Right.
and mercenaries,
But he's most
and
famous now for being in, Breaking Bad
yeah.
and Better Call Saul.
That's right. He wasn't those, wasn't he?
Yep.
I
Yep.
never saw Better Call, but he wasn't Breaking Bad, yeah. But I remember seeing him in a whole bunch of like military movies
Yeah, he was
even
in like
before him as well.
Clear and Present Danger and
The
like
Rock.
The Rock, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Playing
Dark
a lot of
Director, no.
military guys, yeah.
Yeah. And he was always this character. Yeah. But again, it's a nice subtle bit where he's a part of the crew by the end of the movie.
Right.
Even when Dr. Wren still assumes he's loyal to him and then says, like, no, I'm actually with them now. Like,
Right.
I'm an outlaw now. There's a cool cut sequence that's in the extended edition of DiStefano talking to Christie, but they're about to go under the water. And they have a brief conversation in which it helps sell DiStefano's character of how exciting he finds the crew of the Betty. Because
Oh,
he
okay.
talks to Christie, he says, do your guns fire underwater? And Christie says, yeah, these guns are disposables, so they can handle it. And the guy's like, what do you mean by disposable? He's like, well, they're not important. Like, I can get rid of them when they're done. And
Right.
they have this whole conversation where he geeks out about like how cool Christie is with his weird guns and
Right.
how different it is from the military mindset.
Right.
It's a cute scene that I
Nice.
kind of wish was left in the theatrical, because it gave a
And
little
it
bit more
lampshades
character.
why those guns work underwater when they
Exactly. Yeah,
probably shouldn't, you know.
they mentioned that the Betty kind of, because they use what they call disposables, they're just kind of put together,
Right.
and that they operate differently than regular firearms,
Right.
because they're not meant to last.
Ah, okay.
So they kind of imply that, I fire off 10 rounds of this gun and it's useless after that, but and so it does fire underwater because apparently
Cool.
that's
Yeah.
how that works. But anyway, DiStefano has a cute, it's just a cute scene for DiStefano to kind of like geek out over them the way he does with Call. He finds
Right.
out she's a robot.
Yeah.
Little things like that where the character is just so excited to be with the Betty, how different they are. It's a cute bit. But
Right.
yeah, like I said, that's mostly what's in the special edition, is little bits like that were just cut for time. And then a different ending and a different beginning. But
Right.
the abomination lasts. It doesn't have an ending
Yeah.
without that.
Right. Unfortunate. Yep.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's not a version of this movie in which Alien does not fuck an alien. And that a weird
Potato monster does,
potato
results.
creature
Yep.
with sad eyes
The
comes out.
saddest eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyways, I guess I'll take us out of here then.
Yeah,
If
absolutely.
there's nothing else, thank you guys for listening. Xenomarch will continue next week with Prometheus, so look forward to that.
Another another polarizing.
Another polarizing and very flawed film that I love.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
So, come back for that. Thanks again for listening. Tell your friends about us. Watch out for each other. It's a cruel world out there. Earth's a shithole. We know that.
Earth, what a shithole.
Yep.
I'd rather stay here with the things, man.
With that, I'll just remind you to be kind, rewind, but mostly be kind. Thanks.
Oh, sassy devil, dancing at the devil's ball.